Hi, I'm Josh, and I wanna orca you around. Well, I will. Well, I will.
Hi, I'm Matt, and I'm also gonna talk about Orca, goddammit, because I couldn't remember where this was streaming when I went to go look for it to watch it. And I thought, Tubi, this seems like a Tubi thing. And Tubi doesn't have it, but when you type in ORC, it auto-generates any results with ORC in them. So I got what turned out to be like a really simplistic plot for a movie, which is Divorce, Sorcerer, Orchid, Exorcists.
I would watch that. That's your five acts right there.
Right? Yeah. And I'm mad. I said that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's a quick step into a goal for all is what that is. Let's see. This is Charlie down in Austin. I will freely admit, and this is it's embarrassing to admit out loud, but I really enjoyed one of our movies this week. Drop. I really kind of enjoyed this sort of silly, dumb popcornness of it. What I did not enjoy was watching it again. And I was like, that was fun. I want to get up and do some stuff, use the restroom, and clean the kitchen or else. A good half hour, 45 minutes after I finished, I was like, oh, like drops, like airdrops. Like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, so, oh, Charlie. Charlie, like, this isn't live. We can edit this, buddy.
Oh, no. But I would, otherwise nobody would, you know, I would be able to keep it a secret. But it's sort of like, yeah, no, it was just like, I think of myself as being a relatively, like, aware kind of person. And I was just literally like, I was just doing something in the kitchen. And I'm like, oh. Fucking drops like airdrops, like Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, I have no place from which to throw my stones because my glass house is me talking about that Rob Zombie movie and going, and why did they call it 31? And Josh just very kindly going, well, you see Halloween.
Technically.
Oh, right. Yeah.
October is 31.
And, you know, now that we're back from the atmosphere with the drops of Jupiter in our ears, this is Harsha Hot Dog.
Cha-cha-cha.
So first up, we have a short that's called Panic or Attic Panic or Panico in el Attico.
And oh, that's pretty great.
I was convinced that we did this panic before. I thought surely
panic
we did.
At the disco. I mean, this is a David Sandberg short, which as soon as you see Lana Loston on the you know that it's got to be them. And like everything else I've seen from them, it is a tight 3 minutes. It gives you some suspense and a simple mechanism, at least one moment that makes you go, yeah, and then it's gone, you know, like, and I dig this. It's like a four panel gag, but as a movie, like as a framework for doing a thing. I dig it.
I like this one too. I thought it's a little slight, but it's fun. It's you know, quick and it's over. It's like a fortune cookie. It's delightful.
Well, and he's such a master at being able to like to sort of like make things just claustrophobic enough where you're like, I have no escape from this.
Yeah.
And I sort of like, and then you're stuck. And it's sort of like, I think that's actually one of the reasons. I think one of the reasons why the full length movie just didn't really 100% nail it, just because it was like, it just kind of, it let out the air too much. It gave too much.
Yeah. There was just, well, you too can't much stay at 11 for an hour down, and a half. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It should have all been, they should have let Oz Perkins film that instead. And like the whole movie should have just been her going about her day. And then the last 3 minutes is just the lights out short. That'd be great.
People would argue about it on the internet forever.
Yeah. And then Oz Perkins would be like, we need to take off those last 3 minutes. That sucks. Yeah. Like, what? That's with all the action and interesting stuff. And like,
what?
He was frightened by an audience as a small child, and now he can't stand to think about them.
That's fair.
We kid Oz Good Perkins.
Yeah, yeah, all's good, Perkins.
He's such a sweet human. It's just sort of like, it's like there's a couple other people that I won't mention, but there's people that you're like, I really like them as a person. I don't necessarily like the thing that they make per se.
Oh, sure. Like, yeah.
I do like them as people. They're nice people, but it's like, yeah, it's kind of a weird, a weird thing. He's got a new one coming out, I think, in November, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Keeper.
Yeah.
It's the sequel to Trapper.
I was trying to get a Velcro thing going. I couldn't.
God damn it.
It's Trapper John MD's son, Keeper.
Jesus.
Who's a jail guard in New England.
Alan Alda just keeps stopping by and like, come on. My dad died like 20 years ago. Come on. Only it's Alan Alda from Wanderlust. So it'll be good. This guy, like, the gag in this is impeccable, with the ghost or the figure covered in a sheet standing on the other side of the bars. She pulls the sheet off of him and there's nothing underneath. And then the sheet is now on the other side of the bars. And yep. So is the guy. Like, that's good stuff. That's new. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, the part that to me is like the A plus thing that you kind of expect from his shorts is the tension is quickly multiplied as soon as they start twisting a light bulb and you realize she's going to be plunged into complete darkness, because it's already creepy. And now you go, oh, and then you'll be in here with this thing in complete darkness. Like, damn it, man. Like, you know, like you found a fifth gear here and it's like, what a great idea. I love that.
It's just a little squeaky, squeaky. And you're like, guess, squeaky, squeaky. And then you find out.
Yeah. Good stuff.
All right. We recommend for 3 minutes of your time. Well worth it.
Yeah. He does just like other people that have really kind of nailed their thing. Like Chris McEnroy is a good example. It's sort of like, if he wants something that's just dumb as a bag of hammers and also gross and splattery and fun, Chris McEnroy's your guy. So like, if that's what you're looking for, that's your thing. Like, that's, you know, it's sort of like certain people just sort of have a thing and it's like, yep, that's.
Yeah. Some people have a type.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, it's just sort of like, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's kind of lovely. So yeah, this guy just—I don't know how the ever-loving hell he can make things so claustrophobic so quickly. It's so impressive. His entire movies that try to do claustrophobia things and just can't swing it, and he does it in 3 minutes. Like, yeah. So yeah, no, well done.
So then let's talk about Drop, or I mean, it could be La Caída, which is kind of a fall. It could be Soltar, which is to like release. I like La Baja because that sounds like a blast. So,
all right.
Drop or La Baja involves a woman who is out for dinner with a date that she met and has been chatting with on a dating app. And she starts getting airdrops or, you know, generic store brand airdrops from a random person in the restaurant who demonstrates that he has sent a goon into her house and she can see them on the security cameras, and then makes increasing demands of her up to like, you're going to kill your date tonight. And then they kind of chasey for a while. And I don't know, man, I was distracted by some things in this movie.
Okay.
Because it, on the surface, like it's got a good setup. It's got a, like the trailer version of this was really solid, but it just is so weird to me. I really feel like these two characters, and I say this with love, came from a Hallmark movie, because they're like just a little bit prettier and just a little bit richer and just a little bit dumber than anyone I've ever met. Right.
Yeah.
And the lady lives in a mansion, like a Frank Lloyd Wright fucking $3 million mansion. And she's like talking to her sister while we're just panning through this gigantic house. Like there is I swear we went past like a fully sized carousel. No, we didn't. But
yeah, their kitchen doesn't have an island. It has an archipelago.
It has a full peninsula. Wait, that's not as fancy. And then she goes to meet the guy at this restaurant that it looks like it would be a couple $100 a plate and you would get minuscule, like microscopic,
yeah, like four of bites
food.
Of something.
Yeah, like, yeah. I've never seen such an opulently dressed restaurant in my life. And so the whole thing just has this like fashion.
It is
magazine
the same kind of restaurant as the Final Destination Bloodlines opening, which is what I couldn't get out of my head. And that was a much more exciting opening of a movie.
Yeah, well, because we're in modern day, and so instead of being a rickety, unsafe thing, it's like the hottest ticket in town, right?
Yeah.
And then we have this waiter who just does like cringe comedy.
I tried really hard to get mad at the film for having that really broad character, except that like I know too many of that guy. That I was like, God damn it, that is I didn't really dig the improv scene after a while.
Why is the camera at his waist? Like, why is he looming into the camera? And then they cut to the other people and they
Is that like a red herring maneuver? Is that
maybe like maybe? I never once thought that he was the guy.
No, nor did I. There were part of the problem I had with this movie is sometimes when they were trying to like indicate that we should be remember, it could be anyone, like they dim the lights. And like
they did a lot of dramatic lighting,
spotlight
yeah, like solo
certain people and shit. And I was
yeah.
like, "What, guys, are you? I mean, and I kind of came out of this movie thinking that's all sincere and it's just like a style or maybe the beginnings of a style and it's just a little rough yet. But it was just, it also just made me feel like, do you think I'm too dumb to realize that like when you describe the three people with a line of dialogue, I can't pick them out of the people I'm looking at on screen. You have to like change the lighting to make sure I'm looking at the right person.
But they're also changing it for emotions too.
They are.
Like when she gets a text, everything goes dark. And sometimes the text like shows up on the wall.
Sometimes I thought that worked. Sometimes it pissed me off.
Yeah, that can work. It just, I don't know. I just never felt immersed in this to the point where I could be worried for this lady and the guy and everything. And I think that was compounded by the end, which is this brief scene in a hospital room. And it's lit like the opening of Vanilla Sky. It's just somebody like looked at a Monet sunset and was like, they need really that motherfucker needs to turn his shit up to 11. It's just purples and oranges just streaming through the window. And they're talking like old friends and everything is beautiful now. And I was like, did they die? Is this taking place in the afterlife? Because it felt so off. And I think that just kind of
it slips into what dreams may come at the end.
Right. I just think that's indicative looking back on how I felt about the movie. It was just all of this is just a little bit off. Nobody talks like that. Nobody would make that choice in that situation. Nobody would think that this is normal and nobody would do this and that. And it was just like, none of you are people. I don't get it. And I think it's just like, let Chris Landon write the goddamn script because that's what he does. Real well. But, you know, like I didn't hate this. It's very well put together, but it never once got its hooks in me.
Well, it's kind of like, I was thinking about why. Because I really enjoyed this. I kind of just were like, it's like, all right, brain, you got to turn down to lower wavelength, and then just we're going to go. And it's like, and then that was sort of the wavelength at which I did it. But I was thinking about like, it's kind of like Hard Eyes or Happy Death Day, and it's like how those have that extra bit of thing. And there's a little bit of extra in there that really kind of makes you feel for and root for people. And Landon just does it so well. And like this one, it's like, I give both of the lead actors like a lot of credit because it was just sort of like, they definitely were, I mean, I don't know. For me, I thought they had like a nice dynamic to what was going on. And I thought there was the correct amount of overshare, pullback, you know, that's okay, but this is the thing. And then kind of, you know, all this kind of awkwardness, whatever else. But they did it in a way that I found kind of pleasant. But it's like, it only goes so far. And then I was thinking like with Hard Eyes or like with Happy Death Day, how you get that just extra little bit of you know, real human warmth there. And I was like, these guys were doing their absolute level best. They just, I think from a script standpoint, they just weren't given just enough to do that stuff.
That I thought that they were actually very good actors. They just were hampered with material. Like,
getting Lucas'd.
Yeah, I liked our dude that, you know, is the impossibly patient good guy. Like, I like him. He's just not real. Like, he's just this impossible set of one more shot and just understanding enough and happened to read the right Chicken Soup for the Soul book and has a past himself. Like all these things keep piling on to make this character more and more insane. And but he's only playing it with such warmth. I want to meet him.
But he's got to do that. He only has to do that because the script doesn't know what to do if he gets up to leave.
Right. Yeah. There's no, if he storms out, there's no way to keep him there short of like actively murdering him in front of people.
It's like, hey, you keep looking down at your phone and then looking up and crying. And you went to the bathroom and you came back like with a bloody nose and like, clearly something's up and if you need help, I'll get you help. And if you don't want to tell me, that's fine. But we're not on this date. Okay. Like, and he never gets to that stage. And I do think that strains credulity a little bit. It is weird to me how much time we spend establishing the house when that really doesn't come into play at all.
I thought there'd be more cat and mousey type stuff in the house too. You know, I don't know. I guess it's, I don't know. I just assumed maybe just from like that brief moment in the trailer, you know, that you show, oh, there's someone on her camera feed from home. And it's like, I guess I assumed there would be more active menacing.
Like the, we would something. Be cutting back and forth maybe.
Yeah. And it just, it was
to sister, I mean, and
it,
kid.
It's just strange. It didn't, I don't know.
Now that would add a level of complexity. I don't know if it could sustain, but I think it might have
or maybe
helped.
That would be the hook it needed to like ratchet up the tension somehow. I don't know. Like,
it's just when we get to the end of it, we have like her crowning moment of awesome where she has slipped out the poison and not put it in the shot that they thought the shot had the shot poison in it.
Everybody's so dead.
Yeah. So her immunity to Iocane powder works and that's great. But she has realized that the bad guy is the bad guy because he knows her name and she never told it to him. And like everything you promised was a lie. I am your father. My mentor is evil. Like they call me Mr. Tibbs, like every goddamn trope. And then she, you know, gets to go back to the house and have her like, second crowning moment of awesome. And I don't know. It felt way more predictable than it should have been with that story. And I think it's a clumsy script. It's just clumsy.
Well, I think that's the biggest kind of drawback.
Yeah.
And out of anybody, I think I'm probably oftentimes the one that gets really fussy about tenured things where I'm sort of like, no, you never said this out loud before you gave it to a person to act it. And yeah. It's like, we're working through shorts and things. And like, there's definitely a couple of them. I'm like, no, like, God damn it. Yeah. And it was just anger. And so it's sort of like, I think I have a sensitive ear for that kind of thing. And I think maybe just with this, it didn't bother me as much. Cause like I said, they were really doing their level goddamn best to kind of like build this level of chemistry. But yeah, there's a thing about the mechanic of this that is the one, I would say the one kind of drawback. Although I will say one of the reasons why I like this as much as I did was I got to the end of it and went, thank you for not making the entire restaurant the trap and everybody's in on it.
That would have been even more inexcusable cliche.
When I finally got to that second or third act, when things kind of just really accelerated, I kept thinking like, it's going to be the bartender and the cook and the hostess and this thing and that thing. There's going to be 10 people in there that are still alive.
And
yeah, it's like, and you're going to see a bunch of the people that are supposed to be working there, like all shivering in the walk-in, and it's sort of like, and it's like, this is this whole thing. And it's like, so they didn't do that. I was like, oh, thank God you didn't, because that would be the first rest stop off the off-ramp is that. And it's like, and so they didn't do that. I was like, oh, thank you for not doing that. And so like, but then this mechanic of this, I really like the idea of taking somebody, you survey a situation and go like, how do you manipulate a situation? And then you go like, you go in from the side. And so like that part of the mechanic is really great. It's just the whole thing with her children or with her child rather, her sister, and that being the thing, I just kind of like, I get it to a point. And it's like, certainly she's going to be invested and want to keep her sister and her child alive, of course. But it's kind of like, that mechanic just sort of needs an extra gear. Like there needs to be some other something with the mayor character that this guy is the photographer for. There has to be somebody like the mayor's right hand man guy, where there has to be some other component.
There's a lack of context for.
Yeah. Because it's like, it's sort of one of those things where you have to like put her on a speaking circuit, put her on a talk show, put her somewhere, like give her something else to be noticeable.
Oh, you know what you should do? You should like trap her in like a stadium with her target. Absolutely. Yeah. It's got a little bit of like, yeah, the fear that it would have like a Fincher, ending ripoff would have been bad, but like
Evil Boyfriend would have wrecked it. Yeah,
I don't know. I guess I felt like this isn't ever like bad. It's just kind of infuriatingly bland, where they'll kind of build up a little steam, and then because they have to kind of keep this incredibly contrived idea going, they have to deflate the balloon a little bit so that. And that's how you keep getting these loops of leaving the table, coming back to the table, bathroom, back to the table, switching tables, back to the table. It's like all that is just kind of never moving anything forward. We're getting the same kind of repeat of 10-minute chunks kind of over and over without a lot of heightening. And I think that's where I just kind of started losing interest and figured this is going to be sort of a, you know, 5.5, 6 out of 10, like acceleration to the end. Just like it was just going to kind of coast across the finish line.
Well, I kept thinking, oh, go ahead, Tessa.
I think that Trap is a good comparison and contrast, because Trap is every bit as slick, you know, it's slicker than lubed up goose poop, but it's equally, or if not way more.
They don't know what I got. They don't
taste
up goose poop.
It's a goose poop riot is what it is.
Sorry,
but anyway, Trap is slick and super silly and preposterous on the face of it so many times, and yet it is still very tense and very entertaining. And this should be the same vein, I think. And
did Trap know what it was better than this movie did?
Trap kept it light,
and that's what I'm wondering. Is like there were moments that were genuinely funny. They're playing it as hard as they can. Yeah, but this movie refuses to acknowledge that it's just kind of silly. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's kind of from a tone standpoint, you either have to go, you have to get more serious, or you have to do get a little goofier. Because I kept thinking about, like, I don't know if you guys have watched, I fucking love it, but there's the series Slow Horses. Have you guys watched that at all?
I've not.
Gary Oldman, but I haven't.
No. Yeah, it's Gary Oldman, Kristen Scott Thomas, and it's basically about this sort of like, we can't fire you necessarily, but you've fucked up as an MI5 person. So you're at this one station, that's a slough house, they call them Slow Horses. And basically it's like, it's kind of a collection of people who fucked up in one way or another, who still have to kind of operate. They're still actual active agents. They're just sort of kind of put to the side basically. And so that's basically what it's about. And one of the seasons, there's this thing about, and I can't think of the actor's name, it's most like Line of Duty, where they have like, you'll have like kind of your people kind of coming into the story, you know, for a season or whatever. But anywho, they one particular season, they had this thing where there's like this sort of operative team trying to get this secret sort of file thing, and it's kind of like, and then you have like, you know, people trying to keep them from getting this file thing, and then being like, what's their motivation for it? It's like, oh, it's a secondary motivation and this other thing. So you basically have your kind of tab A slot B type thing. But what you do with that is then you take it and then they kind of add some more stuff that then basically like motivates basically all this other kind of thing. But it also kind of keeps you kind of off kilter, not because it's trying to be overly confusing, but it's more just sort of like, what are the dynamics here? And so that's why, like, I really think that a whole first act of like setting up our photographer guy and setting up the mayor's right hand man bringing that stuff into it would have like added some additional weight to it, because just sort of like, oh, it's an embezzling-y kind of corruption-y scheme with like the mob. Like, okay, well, whoopty shit. Like, it's, you know, whatever. It's kind of like, and I always think about Rob Delaney talking about, like, joking about Russian mobsters in London and thinking, you know, doing stand-up or whatever else, and people are like, you can't say that kind of thing. Like, I don't know, they love it. It's hilarious. They're like, that's me. Like, it's just like, I think it's hilarious. It's like it is when they said, like, oh, connections to the mob. I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake. Yeah. So, like, you know, make it, give it something much more tangible that's like, you know, you can really hang a hat or three on. And then it kind of, there's some more weight to it. So then when you're interspersing our lady who's on TV talking about a thing or has a much more public sort of, you know, persona to some degree or other, then it's sort of like, then there's an access point and then you can kind of just then add in the human stuff and then it becomes much more interesting because our guy on top, you know, like he's got all the moral reservations, but like in terms of him as his personal life, like, we don't know. Like, you know, he could you know, dress marmots up in S&M stuff for fun. Like, we don't fucking know. And so it's sort of like there's some human elements to that, and then that lever, that mechanism that makes the rest of it go, that just sort of, that part of it is missing. All that being said, I was like, wee, let's go, fun. Like, it was just sort of, that was the way that I watched it. It's like kind of like that was sort of my experience with it. But when you sit back and think about it, like there's some stuff that could really kind of make it swing a bit more. And when you said Fincher, I kept thinking about, like, you're talking about building atmosphere and dread and threat. Like that, the scene in fucking Zodiac where he's in the basement looking at the files, the guy's on the stairwell. Still, if I think about it, it still freaks me out. This little wussy little guy that he could absolutely take, no problem. But it's just, there's a menace to it that's just breathtaking. And it's like, so this wasn't that movie that way either. So it wasn't like the silly bit, or it wasn't like that bit either. So it's like, it's kind of in the middle. And so it's sort of like, you know, it was entertaining. I wasn't bored, but it's like, you know,
it's a streamer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Like I think I would have felt even mad at it if I had seen it in a theater, because it kind of has the same amount of energy as like We Have a Ghost, where it's like, it's just a little bit less. And I think that's the, like, the inverse of surprisingly it's on Netflix is the, like, surprisingly it was theatrical.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, love Chris Landon, still want him to get paid. I think paying him to direct something he didn't write is a bad idea. Like it is with like a Kevin Smith. Like, why would you do that to the audience? But ultimately I think, and I'm kind of glad that I can't see the ratings I've given other movies, because this seems low, but it's where my heart is. I'd say like 6.5 out of 10 for me.
Well, I'm lower. So
but you're an asshole.
That's true. That's true. Someone's got to be the grumpy one. I think it really does just boil down to the idea that it was just kind of bland. It didn't have enough peaks and valleys to get its hooks in me, and that sort of made watching it a bit of a chore. I think there's good people doing their best in it, and it looks great, all that stuff. It's just a little too slight, and without being able to get that little bit of buy-in, then all those little nitpicky things that I talked about start sticking out, you know, as we talk about. So yeah, 5 for just kind of being a little too in the middle.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I had fun with it. I was really kind of rooting for actors that are doing the level best they can with to kind of subpar sort of writing. But it's, you know, it's like I was still, and I would be lying if I said there wasn't certain parts where I was like, come on, oh man. Yeah, you just sort of like, there's a little bit of that, although I still think that could have been ramped a bit, higher. And also, thank you, Matt, for pointing out that improv later was just like, oh, man.
So just bad.
Like, it's just,
I couldn't even be offended.
Yeah, I was just sort of like, I will say, give him one reverse demerit for writing, because, like, he was trying to do all, he was doing a lot of shtick the early part of it, and then he, at a certain point, kind of read the signals, and then just sort of, like, he was still just quirky, but like not so over the top that it was sort of like, it was just, you know, big scene chewing nonsense. And I thought that was motivated by the story. It was like he kind of just was like, that's
out. Yeah, it's time for the movie to be more serious and dramatic, so we're going to tone down the silly guy. Yeah.
Well, and it just sort of like, because otherwise it becomes like, you know, the I am the singing telegram, like it's shot clue. It's kind of like if he just sort of, if he's that over the top the entire thing, it's like, well, he has to get capped. Like, that's kind of like, yeah. Why on earth would you do it otherwise? So I've kind of appreciated that dialed him back a bit over the, as it went along, which was good. So like I said, I was still entertained. I had fun with this. So I'm going to be the high man of the totem pole, call it a 7. Call it a 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Perfect. That's what it was. Yeah, perfect footage from security cameras. Because as somebody who put a decent amount of money into our like camera for Joe when she's a baby that we still use now, it's like, for what the fucker cost, it's sort of like, it's just like you expect somebody to pop in the background like, oh, Fatty Arbuckle, because it's just the picture quality standpoint. So the fact that it's just sort of like just this perfect 1080, 2160 level of like clarity, or else like, no, what if they've got a buffer at some point, for fuck's sake. Out of 10.
They could have done something with a like freezing the frame on the camera and having the guy holding the kid, but then he's not still there. They've just frozen the camera. Anyway, but
then it's just speed.
I am here to consult on any and all such films. All right, should we take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about some orcas and some pushing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people who are pushing orcas. Don't do that. It's not nice.
Don't push the orca.
First one's free.
Excuse me.
I'm back in a moment.
So up next we have Push or Empuja. Yeah, this movie is about a realtor who is nearly like all the way pregnant, like as pregnant as you can be,
so and pregnant.
Is having an open house in the middle of nowhere for a giant mansion that people got murdered in, and finds herself on the run from kind of crazy man who has crashed the open house and has startled her into active labor. And so she has to survive and keep the baby alive. She can't just clench. And she's got to, you know, fight the basically Mike Myers without a mask. Yeah. So I will say this did not thrill my soul. And the more that I think about it, the more I think it's just, we spend a third of the movie before it kicks in. And I feel like in a little more sure-footed movie, that time would be spent giving us the whole layout of the house, showing us things that are going to be of use later. And like they do a tiny bit of that, but mostly it's just like, okay, down this corridor, here's the kitchen. Down this corridor, here's the bathroom. Look how big this place is. But I never got a sense of what the layout was or how big it was supposed to be. And by the when the bad guy shows up, he just fucking teleports. He is anywhere the script requires him to be. So it's never like, oh, dude, in act one, I saw that there's this secret passage between these two rooms that he doesn't know about, but she does. Like, oh my God. Or that she doesn't know about what he does. Holy shit. There's none of that. And then we have like 20 minutes to hang out in the house with the JC. And then we get knocked into the hospital where none of the people who are up and moving and stabbing should be up and moving at all. And it just kind of peters out for me. And so like there is a cracking little bit of this where it's got some tension going. And, you know, like action pregnant lady gets to do some fun things. And then it's like, meh. I mean, this is a movie where a person gives birth in a mausoleum and gnaws the umbilical cord off.
Yes, and
for some reason it doesn't hit. It made me think of like Revenge, you know, where she like cauterizes her belly wound with the side of a tin can and like that level of hardcore, you know, like Sydney Sweeney birthing the abomination and killing it with a rock kind of thing. And compared to that, I don't know, like this just, I don't know. It didn't blow my skirt all the way up. I think the children would call it mid.
Is it me who is wrong? No, it's the children.
Well, always the children or old people, either direction, either way down the slope of the hill. The thing I kept thinking about with this was, I think, the lady, or the central lady, is she's She's I think she's compelling and interesting enough, and I think she's not so John McClane where it becomes super silly, but it's enough where you're like, it kind of keeps the things going. Because if she was just a wilting flower victim, then it's kind of like, oh, that's stopping interesting a long time ago. But the choice that they made. But you don't
give birth and then run.
Well, that was, yeah, I kept thinking, but that was sort of, the whole last 20 minutes of this movie, I kept going like, well, I didn't know a pregnant lady or a recently given birth lady could do that. Well,
yeah, it's like maybe they like tried to look up facts and actually looked up like gazelle or something. Hmm. And they're like, yeah, they just shit out a kid and they both run off.
Like, ChatGPT, can a woman run?
Yeah, right. No.
But the I thought she was, I thought she was compelling enough and it was dynamic and interesting enough. But there were some very specific things, what seemed like very specific choices that they made in this, that like, for one, there was the whole, like, the kind of motivating to get her there in the first place, and then the kind of relating thing, which is like, okay, that is what it is. Fine, whatever. I'm not going to argue that. That is whatever. It doesn't really matter. But then the whole thing about, like, dude showing up, and then, like, her showing around, and the rapidly dusking kind of light was just sort of like, it was very tense, but until you start thinking about it for 2 seconds, you're like, why would anybody in their right fucking mind do this? But it's sort of like, so it's tense until you start thinking about it. But then
it's a whole, like, semaphore of red flags.
Like, yeah, and it's right. Just like, dude, what is happening with this? Like, that's, so there was that. But then, you know, the way that the way the guy was behaving and the way that stuff was going, I just kept thinking of, like, so there's this movie from 2014. I would love to look it up so I wouldn't forget what it was. But there's this movie from 2014 called The Man in the Orange Jacket. And it's a, actually I wanted to go look it up because I couldn't remember what the hell country it was from, but it was a, it's somewhere Eastern European kind of job. It was a, just gotta find it right now so I can kind of remember. And it's like, it looks remarkable. It's like, it has a really excellent look about it. But the thing is, the bad guy who just sort of was like falling the people around and causing all the manner of invasion and sort of havoc. Oh, Latvian, Estonian, that's where it was. That's trying to remember where that's that kind of environment. But so, like, it looks really good. There's some moments that are really, really tense. But what you don't really have is, like, all you really know in that one is at the very beginning, somebody gets, like, let go from their job. And then, like, basically, like, fast forwards to palatial mansion, guy in orange jacket shows up, all kind of menace and violence, and then cat and mouse, cat and mouse, kind of a deal. And then it just sort of, like, stops. And so it looks real good, but, like, there's nothing for our main guy. And so, like, with this one, it's, like, at the very tail end, they're like, yeah, he has this connection with this house, and like, he's just been going there for a long time, and he said he was born there, and he's, like, was born in 1927, and this other thing. And you know, the whole time he's kind of going, like, well, okay, he was the shape before, and so now it's sort of like, there's like this kind of secondary thing that's being added there. Fine, you know, whatever. But it's sort of like,
make him a vampire.
Or just give him something else beyond just sort of like this little bit of throw in at the end, because it kind of just made it super, like, not because, I mean, because like one of my favorite horrors of all time is Halloween, but so it's sort of like, but all we really know is that, you know, you fast forward, escapes from the institution, causes all manner of havoc in Haddonfield. That's sort of like, so it's not too dissimilar in terms of level of data, but it's kind of like the threat level always feels tons higher in like the original Halloween than something like this, even though the amount of data that we're given is not too dissimilar. And so it's kind of like, I don't know. So I think if we stopped and just did a whole big bunch of exposition, it might be too much. And I think it would be too much. But just as it stands, he's just sort of like this kind of like vague threat. And it's kind of like, I don't know. At a certain point, I just kind of was like, I wasn't particularly interested. I just kind of wanted something, give me something else. Or if it's absolutely nothing, if it's just the lights are on, or it's just like, he's done this 3 times before, whatever else, I'm like, okay, that's fine too. But just one of those, like just pick one of them and give me something else, because I care about the lady, I like her and that part of it. But that threat, it just sort of, there's some little context that just didn't occur. And, you know, so anyway, that was just like the one thing that I just kind of kept being like, that. And then also the last 20 minutes just being utterly confused about the capacity of a pregnant lady or newly having given birth lady. Like, I just didn't know. I was like, is that a thing? I don't know if it's a thing or not. I'm not sure.
I feel like like that, the combination of like all the things that we were calling out is like, this is kind of crazy and that's a little wild and this is a little undercooked. I felt like that's the stuff that similarly to what I was saying about Drop, like not doing this. I think this movie gave me permission to just say, ah, fuck it. They're not going to take any of this all that seriously. So don't sweat little shit like that. Mm. Whereas I felt like with Drop, like they wanted like real actual emotional investment. This one, I think they wanted us to kind of go on a little ride. And I think that maybe just kind of like let me settle in and be more forgiving and kind of enjoy things a little more piecemeal, perhaps. Like I felt like we had that sequence early on while she's like stuck at the house, like the car won't work before the repair guy or whoever shows up. Hmm. And there's like a series of like three or four cat scares in a row. And there were enough that by like the third one or fourth one, I kind of giggled at like, this is getting silly how many of these they're doing. Mm. And maybe it was just meant to be like that intense and terrifying, but I just started having fun. And so, yeah, like Deuter's some kind of weirdo that says he'll live as long as the house stands is some weird Fall of Usher bullshit that like, I just took to mean, yeah, this guy's just a nutter. And so like, this is what he says. And he's enough of an anonymous guy that, you know, we don't really know who he is or what to do with him. But like, I never for a second thought like, ah, yes, this is all part of this great grand gothic scheme. I'm like, no, this dude's crazy. It's like, there's that guy that keeps getting arrested in, what is it, England? Because he just keeps standing in the middle of the same intersection of the road until the police have to come and arrest him and take him away because he's just blocking traffic.
Everybody's got to have a hobby.
Yeah, but like the guy like has done time. And when he gets out, the first thing he does is go back and just stand in that intersection. He's like gotten arrested multiple times. So like, I just thought of that guy and they're kind of like, okay, this is just this dude's thing. It's like my house. Like, no one gets in this house but me. And like, well, do you live there? No, the house is too important. I just got to watch it. It's like, all right, cool. You're like the Grail Knight of shitty real estate. So
I was very fearful at the end there where they said he said he would live as long as the house stands, that she was going to go burn down the house.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I kind of thought that would happen and that would have made it a perfect Hammer horror film.
I think there is a version of this movie where they had more budget and they were like, she should totally because like the house represents this like albatross that her sexist coworkers hung around her neck. Right.
Yeah.
Nobody can sell it. And they gave it to her, give it to the pregnant lady and kind of haze her with that assignment. Right. So perfect. She burns down the house and then the guy dies and there we go. And I would have been very peeved about that. I think it would have been way too pat, you know?
Yeah. It would be cute. A little too cute, perhaps.
But they needed to, I don't know, if the guy is just a guy, like put a mask on him and make him like the strangers, you know? If your late game reveal is going to be that he is as old as the house, like that would be dope. Get weird with that. Like maybe he needs to suck the life force out of your kid so that he can like restore
the
house.
Well, that was what I was expecting. Former glory,
like some shit, you know?
That's honestly what I was expecting. I was expecting it to be somebody in the reality office is tied in with some culty business. And like the whole thing is to have her there because they're going to do some culty child sacrificing some other. And it was like, I kept thinking like, well, it's like that's the way they're going to go. And I don't know really know about that, but maybe kind of. And then they were just like, no, just one fella. And, all right.
So yeah, we're certainly doing a lot of gymnastics to try to make this movie into a better movie than it is.
Like, yeah,
to give it the credit I do want to give it for sure is that it does have a really good look to it. And I really love that they made a suspense thriller thing. It doesn't have just absolutely spastic, nauseating, inducing editing. Because that's sort of the thing where if you don't have a whole lot of moving parts, that seems to be the thing that people will kind of lean into. And I get so fucking tired of that. And so I appreciate that they really worked in spaces and kind of like worked with the kind of the minimal lighting, all that kind of jazz. That I really kind of dug because it was like, I get so tired of that kind of like, we're just going to be like, woo, 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 with the editing because we just don't have a lot going on. So I really like that for sure. And I like the lady on that part of it. The relocating to the hospital thing, I was kind of like, okay, well, that's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, that's a little too much to do in the third act. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like we've all seen them. We've all seen multiple ones that fall that kind of category. They're like, oh, we're gonna get to the hospital, and it's sort of like, it's like, oh, many, many people will be dispatched without any backup being called whatsoever.
Yeah, I feel like I don't think you could claim that there's a bigger emotional payoff in this movie than her giving birth and gnawing through the umbilical cord and then fighting off the murderer. Like, you've shot your shot at that point. Like, you're not going to, like, have us reset.
A stinger, like, have him pop up.
Yeah, but like,
and you, have him cap him. You know,
how was that not the climax? Like, mm-hmm. It just seems so weird to be like, oh, you know what the best part of fireworks is? Driving home. Mm-hmm. What? Although I also agree, though, our lead, I looked it up on IMDb because I felt bad none of us could remember the name, Alicia Sands. I did like her. I thought she was good. And again, just kind of struggling to do the best you can with the material, but she seems game for everything the movie's asking her to do, so I bet she'd be mm-hmm. good in something a little tighter.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just the number of movies that have the like female John McClane kind of thing. Like, half of them have Samara Weaving in them. We know this. And
yes.
And we have watched the like just put through the meat grinder kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know that she gets all the way there. Even though she had to give birth in a graveyard, like lots of people have to give birth where they don't wanna.
Yeah.
And then she kind of just gives birth and shrugs it off. We just kind of, yeah. I think maybe part of it is just her reaction to just like mildly wincing and limping a little bit. Just doesn't quite, I don't know, doesn't quite dance the dog.
I think I ended up just kind of like smiling and tilting my head to the side a little bit at some of this stuff in the same way you sort of have to watch a giallo film. Mm-hmm. You're just like, yeah, none of this is like realistic per se, but okay, we're gonna enjoy watching the flashing colors and lights on screen for a bit. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did like the visual style because it was pretty naturalistic. Yeah. thinking about all of the bisexual lighting from last week,
and right,
I do appreciate a modern indie movie that just uses cinematography wisely, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost feels almost not quaint, that's not the right word, but it almost feels like kind of to some degree novel, because they're just there's so much of that kind of thing of just sort of like of just the camera has to just be like on its ninth cup of coffee and then just sort of like on roller skates that have one dodgy wheel per foot, and it's just kind of like I get so tired of that, and it's like, so to settle back in and just let the space do the work was good. But to Josh's point though, like, yeah, that because we get to there at dusk and it's kind of like it's this gigantic 50,000 square foot house, it's sort of like, it's like, this space wise, it does kind of make me think of like sci-fi shows, whatever else, like a, you know, like a Battlestar Galactica or a Deep Space Nine or whatever else. They're like motherfuckers been walking down that same damn hallway. Like, that's just not, you know, it's kind of like there's that, you know. So it's like, you know, but certainly somebody that has some talent and a good eye for stuff. It just kind of needed to some extra stuffing, I think.
Yeah, some kind of. Another little bit of oomph. If there only was a word for like a sudden forward motion, you would give to give something else a forward motion. That's what this needed.
Yeah.
It's a shame we don't have a word for it. So yeah,
one day science will solve this problem. Right. Yeah.
For me, like, this is just slightly less engaging than Drop. And it's just weird to think, because I know that there are worse movies that I've given better scores. But the kind of underwhelming thing is worse than just like being incompetent in some way or another. Like, this is perfectly acceptable, and that's not really my jam. So, yeah, it's like a 6 flat for me. 6 trimester. Yeah, that's too many.
Yeah, this is, I think, like, I just had the opposite experience with these movies that you did, Josh. Because, like, all the things about
drop that I thought were just kind of bland. I thought this was just quirky enough in the right ways to make it a little more interesting. I was kind of rooting for this one, I guess. So yeah, for me, this is like a six that is more like, hey, good try, buddy, than it is a like six, slight but disappointment.
Better than my six.
Yeah, like a more like a more positive six than yours. Yours is kind of a sad six. But yes, in all ways better, though, too. Don't forget better.
Is it Ali Wong has the I'm a kind six?
Who can say?
Yeah. Anyway, Charlie, what say you? What say you?
Yeah, I mean, but so oddly enough, it was going to be the same damn number, which is just silly. For
podcast complete. Reason. We've rated something 666. Nailed it.
Oh, like, Bruce Dickinson is so happy right now.
I didn't even think about that. It's just, yeah, no, so I mean, I kind of had the same kind of thing. Like, they had enough going for it that there's some things I really liked about it. I liked some of the craft choices. I really appreciated that for sure, which I just don't see enough of. So I was really glad about that. Yeah, certainly there certainly could be a little bit more stuffing there, or, you know, like starting with they're having the game open house earlier the fucking day, or just some other threat having a guy kill some people on the road. I don't know. Just any number of things that could add some extra to it. And then also potentially the just contextualizing, like, not to diminish women in any capacity, but just to kind of understand to what capacity people can do stuff when they're nine and a half months pregnant and or having just given birth. Like, I don't know enough, so I would like to at least contextually understand, like, just something, anything, like something. So, but yeah, so I'm just gonna say a flappy six.
Yeah. Speaking of flappy,
so like from the 20s.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, let's talk about Orca. Let's talk about Orca, because take like a Jaws and then rip it off some, but. I mean, like, this clearly is happening because Jaws was a thing, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I felt like this is in a different kind of vein, because Jaws is kind of a one-on-one or like one-on-two kind of guy. And this Orca is like a weapon of mass destruction. This
that was
orca,
a pleasant surprise.
This killer whale commits arson. That is amazing. His body count makes Jaws look like a chump. So
this was weirdly like, yeah, I was expecting something much more directly Jaws ripoffish, and that's the DNA's in there certainly. But this actually reminded me of like other sort of clumsy, similar era environmental horror movies, which is a really micro subgenre specific thing, but like Manitou or something like that, where, you know, something has happened to throw off nature's order and nature fights back. And right. In this one, it's just a supernatural orca that
they have an almost human capacity for vengeance.
So good. Yeah,
the several times this movie where the several times where he pops up out of the water and does the orca equivalent of motherfucker.
Dude, every time I started laughing so hard partway through this movie, because like the second time that he like breaks something or eats someone and then he just starts breaching over and over, in my head, I was hearing the Scooby-Doo laugh. So he's like, hum, hum, hum. And he's like, ah, and he's like, ree. And like off he goes. And then he swings back around and does it again. And then off he goes. And I was like, this movie's awesome.
Well, it's so fascinating too, because like just did a series of all the Jaws ripoffs, kind of a thing, kind of because of the 50th anniversary of Jaws. Mm-hmm. And they did like Grizzly, they did Piranha, and they did what the hell else? Other ones were there? And they had, but they also had Alligator in there. But I fucking love Alligator because that one is like, you want to talk about like the choice that they made? Yeah, they did some seriously fucked things in that movie. But they also had these two wonderful characters that I would have watched half a dozen movies of them with them in it. And I love those two characters. I love that dynamic. And they put some serious weight into like writing these great characters. I love that. And so it's kind of like, I hate lumping Alligator in there because I think it's rules. But something like this one, it's like Richard Harris's character sucks. Like, He's just like the sexist, awful, mean-spirited, foul-tempered dude. And he's just like okay, so you have that end of it, and then you have what's her name? Charlotte Rampling.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's sort of like with a woman that has just serious levels of acting chops and ability, to have her become this like wafting bit of linen for a lot of this, it was just so weird. And then it's like, and then fucking Bo Derek pops up there at
one point. Yeah, as like the plucky research assistant.
It was just like, what is happening? And I think it was one of those, this is Dino De Laurentiis, and then I think this is...
Yeah, as soon as I saw his name come up, I was like, oh, we're in good hands here. It's going to be awesome.
Well, because it's like, and they just, I mean, you know, talk about, you know, everybody's seen the things, of course, with... you know, of course, the Cormans of the world and the Trumas of the world and all these different kinds of things. But, you know, that era with the Dino De Laurentiis kind of stuff, like their ambition was fucking limitless in terms of just like nothing was too big of a peak to kind of climb. But at the same time, it's sort of like, it didn't seem like nobody stopped in this one to kind of be like, do any of these characters make any sense at all? Yeah, just like, and even what's his name? The indigenous actor. What the hell is his name?
The guy from Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, the guy from everything. Yeah, Will Sam. Let me look at the thing. But Will Sampson. Yeah, and like, and you gotta go. I don't know if you guys do this, but like, if it's not in one that I know has its bona fides, I kind of go. And I'm like, but he did okay. Didn't do too much of the big Chief Wampum kind of awful dialogue, but still it was like, you know, but again, it's like, it kind of, you step back and go like, how are any of these characters in this thing in any, like, how did any of this stuff kind of jive? And then you have this, the thing with the killing of the mother one, and then it just becomes like, you know, he sunk the other boats because he wants your boat. He wants to fight you in the ocean.
I mean, yeah, there was
a lot of ascribing motivation to the orca.
Is not unsubtle in its Moby Dickishness at this point, like, and that was the thing, that once you get to the end where he's like, the whale literally sticks its tail up out of the water and like curls its flukes like it's the Rock telling Cena to bring it, and then you see this happen, and then I giggle and laugh at how, oh, that's funny, it kind of looks like he's saying, come on, bring it on, and then you cut to the scientist going, yes, that whale is telling you it must be brought in. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's supposed to be the silly joke idea, that's not supposed to be the real idea. And that leads to the movie morphing from Moby Dick to kind of the end of Frankenstein. Yeah. Where it's like mutually assured destruction in the Arctic. Like, wow. Yeah, speaking of ambition, this has it, because that's two literary archetypes that are just astonishing to smash together.
After the orca rams him with an iceberg.
Yeah, it does.
Because this is a resourceful motherfucker. I am still just delighted by the distillery scene where he like headbutts the pipes until the oil starts leaking out. And then headbutts just like a couple of the supports of the house so that the lantern falls and lights everything on fire. It's like, there was no way he could have even seen any of that. This thing is amazing.
This whale's playing 3D chess. Wait.
Which is weird. Well, they go out of their way to describe killer whales as though they were advanced alien species that have superpowers.
Well,
right? Yeah, like they speak a million different languages. They blend in with a crowd. Like, you think it's three cats in a trench coat, and it's really a killer whale. Ah.
Now, we have long known that the killer whale is the velociraptor of the sea, which is why you'll notice the orca in this movie sound like the dinosaurs of Jurassic Park as they squeal and roar and growl through all kinds of bullshit scenes, which are actually really cool to look at when it's stock footage, because whales are just fucking cool. And then
that
when it's the goddamn,
fascinating thing.
When the goddamn puppet shows up, dude.
I totally forgot about the first like 8 minutes of this movie. It's just sort of like, it's like Jacques Cousteau's Be Real, and it's sort of like,
it's
okay.
Just like, aren't whales cool? And it's like,
they are.
Like, this is kind of neat. Like, also, maybe that just starts you in a good mood, and then the rest of the movie you kind of roll with. I don't know.
I love one of my favorite parts, where I think I had to pause that, I was giggling so much, was like when they're describing the shark, and they're like, he has two rows, 48 teeth, and two rows, and this, that, row, and then they show the prop, and it has one row of teeth. Oh my god, I love that. I was just like, they killed him to death. Like, it just like, it's just wow. Because in camera, and I'm like, I'm looking at the thing, and I'm like, did I miss something? I'm running back just to 15 seconds. Like, nope, there's just one row of teeth. that's delightful. So it's just like, it's just, you know, I don't know, man. Like, they're, it's that ambition of a production outfit that just like saw no bounds in any fucking thing, and just, I don't know, it was just a wild kind of a thing. I just wish that there was one or more characters that had, because like in Jaws you have Quint, and you have, you know, like he's this salty dog of a guy and blah, 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 kind of guy, but there's still something about the dynamic between the three, between Roy Scheider, you know, and Richard Dreyfuss and him, that still kind of does the job well.
Yeah, this is like bad localization of those characters, where, yeah, like, you know what I mean? Someone is like, yeah, you have like the kind of salty sea dog captain guy, you know, things have to be his way. And they're like, asshole, got it. And you're like, you're not wrong, but you're not right. Like, you know, yes and no, but also no. So the other thing that I want to make sure I don't forget to mention, because I'll never forgive myself, is that this movie has a generous amount of voiceover narration.
Yes.
And as I was taught long ago, because someone once mentioned, and it's stuck with me since like I was a kid, the Dukes of Hazzard being the only show dumb enough that you had to have a narrator to explain what's happening. And now anytime there's narration in a movie, I go, oh no. Like, they put this together and realize it doesn't make any sense, and they have to literally tell you what's happening. And I don't hate it in this, but again, it just kind of put me in the right mood to enjoy this. So it's so many fun things coming together in such weird ways to make this happen.
Well, you get that lovely opening, and then you have like the killer whale lecture circuit, you get like the whole PowerPoint about them,
TED talk,
and you learn mini whale facts. Yeah. And then you get to watch this thing do increasingly ridiculous things and with his face. I will say that the whale miscarriage is just like genuinely unsettling. It's like, yeah, I don't, that's unpleasant.
That,
was, yeah,
that really went hard into the paint, and I was not expecting that at all. I was like, oh, I thought when like they shoot it and it's shrieking, I'm like, oh, they hit the wrong one. Now they're going to be all pissed and leave. And I'm like, oh, they're going to, oh, like, this is unnecessary, because the rest of the movie is largely bloodless. Well, like, you get a lot of like screaming, and then the whale jumps out of the water, and then everybody goes, no, Carl, or whatever. And that's about it, usually.
Also, I can't believe I was going to let it go without mentioning that our asshole sea captain relates to the whale because a drunk driver hit him and his wife and baby and killed his wife and baby. So he, being the person who has done this to the whale, now has that on his conscience. And we're not so different, you and I. It's like, holy shit. These guys just have a... They're going to be best buddies by the end of it.
Oh, good times.
It could be like a little bit Rain Man, a little bit Tango and Cash. You know.
Well, it also
a little
has
bit the Baby
the,
Shark.
The big... Well, for a brief amount of time. My God, my brain went stillborn shark. but this also has that thing, which, I mean, you guys have whenever there's something said in anything wintry, where it's like, you know, I think Matt, one time many years ago, you put it out that Austin was like, is that, what is that stuff? And like, oh, it's supposed to be snow. He's like, really? And, yeah. Something. And this with the iceberg, whatever else, they get collapsed on by a bunch of asbestos and styrofoam. But I can't be mad at that stuff, because it's just the ambition, the stupid ambition, to like have this big set piece thing that just, yeah, looks like styrofoam, and then it's like you're having to kind of like really ramp up the tension and stuff, but it just looks to your eye just so silly. And it's like, but you kind of like, ah, yeah, fuck it, go with it, yeah, fine. And it's and so you kind of have to roll with that as best you can. And so I just, this is one of those ones that its ambition and scope like overcame its inability to have any likable characters, and just you kind of have to roll with just the level of silly that they place on whales. Because certainly, you know, there's been many studies about, you know, marine biology, about how different things function than we actually think that they do. And that's all well and good. But ultimately, like, when you're like, ah, it's out for revenge, like, I'm pretty sure there's one of the Jaws sequels that was subtitled, that was the subheader was The Revenge. If I'm
four.
Four. That's the one where he travels, like, he takes a bus, and it's like he does a little Forrest Gump across the country to kind of chase him.
Jason in Manhattan, yeah.
Yeah, it's the one where the Jaws shark follows them to the Bahamas to get revenge on these New Englanders.
That's the one, yep. Yeah, no,
and I believe that's the one where Michael Caine said, when someone asked him why he did the movie, he goes, "We paid for this house."
Yeah.
It's like, yep, that's about right.
Yeah, so I just, you know, it's one of those things that just sort of like... What I love above everything else is that how, you know, Shout Factory and Vinegar Syndrome and Synapse and the rest of these guys that were just plumbing the depths of to find stuff and find things and love and celebrate things and all this kinds of stuff. And it's like, and I love that somebody has an enthusiasm for this bit of nonsense. You know, it's the same thing as like a, you know, like the original Ghost Ship or like, what's something to get the mystery movie from Chattanooga a couple of years back, the one about the kind of zombie thing and then the Japanese rock band and the hell it was called, where sort of like there's just these oddities that exist in the world and like there are people that are just that are fanatically, you know, committed to them existing and being shown. So the fact that the one you rent is the one that Shout Factory remastered, it's just like, oh, God bless you weirdos. So, you know, it's like, yeah, that's, it makes it fun. I mean, certainly you could have gotten into like, you know, psychic link sharks. You could have, you know, gone any number of, you know, that kind of thing. And you brought another sharks and another protagonist and whatever. But then it's like, but then, you know, really you had to leave that runway clear for the modern classic that is Deep Blue Sea to come along later on.
That's true.
To cover all of those things, revenge and psychic links and Sam Jackson and just every other great thing about Deep Blue Sea, because that movie fucking rules. I love that movie.
That movie's so good.
So much fun.
This one was just way more of a movie than I was expecting, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, there is a genuine attempt here to make something that is sincerely attempting to tell a story. There's no like wink wink except for the opening scene where the orca just kills the shit out of a great white shark.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun. You know, you gotta do that. It's like the running over the billboard with Nightmare on Elm Street on it. And yeah, you gotta do that sometimes. But
well, I also have to say super fast that I appreciate that like different areas of the world and different types of people making things. You know, it's like, you know, if you're going to do your Jaws sort of send off and it's you're Australian, you're going to make the giant pig movie and it's going to be bonkers and nutty and crazy. If it's, you know, if it's Korea, you're going to take your inspirations and you're going to meld them and mush them and change their shape and turn them into, you know, someone's going to turn into the host. And it's like, if you're Irish, you're going to have a thing. You're going to have a thing that's sort of like allergic to alcohol and then make grappers. Yeah. Like, different parts of the world will interpret these things in very, very different ways. And it's like, and that I really appreciate. And it comes from, you know, not just like the Cue the Winged Serpent type of things, but it comes from stuff like this, of which there are many of them that are not nearly. Like, Grizzly is the best example. Like, the concept of it is great, and watching it is interminable and painful.
Mm.
And so, like, this is more fun to watch, certainly, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the end of it, I think we all learned something.
Yes.
Don't mess with an orca, because it has an almost human capacity for vengeance. Yeah, I'm still thinking about the whale fetus. Like, that should not be a thing that I'm thinking about. And I just like, get out the hose and wash it overboard. Like, put it in the scuppers with a hose pipe on it. Like, what does that mean? It's your child. God, that is, I just kept seeing occasionally the face of the Dumbledore to come. It's like, that is that's just fascinating. Robert Carradine's in here too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Bo Derek might qualify as the only likable person. Like, even after she loses a leg, she's still got a sunny disposition, damn it. She's a can-do. She's the Daisy Duke. What's to say? Yeah, so for me, this is it's a 7 out of 10 because I'm grading on my a curve of my enjoyment of it, and I had a very good time with this.
Yeah, I give this a 7 as well. I think, again, this one, just the fun of the experience is doing a lot of heavy lifting compared to maybe some of the actual quality of what's on screen. But, you know, I kind of hope movies are fun when I go to see them. So this mm-hmm. this was, and I was quite pleased. So, yeah, this was my favorite of the week. This is such a joy and doesn't require a lot of heavy lifting emotionally. So if you like the occasional horror movie that won't make you depressed, this is great for that kind of a thing.
Yeah, because there's not enough of that happening in indie horror right now.
Right.
Shit's fucked. We know it.
Yeah,
I keep thinking of Warren Zevon, and I had to do it when Jess came out of the physical therapy and like her shoulder was hurting and her stomach was hurting and her leg was hurting. I said, your shit's fucked up. I said, my shit's fucked up? He said, your shit's fucked up. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, there's a lot of things that fall into this that kind of like Jaws and sort of category, and it's you know, like diminishing return certainly, but yeah, this is engaging enough and clips long enough where it doesn't have big long saggy stuff where you're just like, you know, like I mentioned Ghost Ship a while ago, like I enjoyed Ghost Ship for the first, you know, for the first little chunk of it, and then George Kennedy's gigantic teeth, but then there's two huge swaths of that are just people walking down graded hallways. And it's just sort of like, it just echoey things and people messing with levers and sort of being snippy with each other for long stretches of time where nothing actually occurs. And so like, you know, to put up, this is a lot more, I think, enjoyable, certainly, and a lot more entertaining if I could just have had like one or two likable characters with a good goddamn. But besides that, it's sort of like, it's, you know, it's a fun little kind of romping sort of thing. So, yeah, I'll be a little lower, you know, but not out of malice. I'll say six out of ten. 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10. Well, your shark dentist doesn't know the fuck he's talking about. Out of 10.
Hell yeah.
He who walks behind the rows of orca teeth.
Yes.
All right. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back with things that we're going to watch next time. That's what we do.
That's true.
So next time we are going to look at Clown in a Cornfield, the would have been hit of the summer that has just dropped on Shudder or will very soon. We are going to watch Together, the theatrical film in movie theaters starring Dave Franco and Alison Brie. I've seen it. I'm going to tell you, it's pretty freaking cool. So hope you dig it. Then we're going to watch Mr. Harrigan's Phone on Netflix because I just read that short story collection and I'm interested to see how they turn that into a full length feature. So Clown in a Cornfield Together and Mr. Harrigan's Phone. I've been Josh this entire time and I will say bye.
Oh boy. We'll have a short next week as we usually would have anyway. That short will be called Cubicle. Oh, somebody's excited about this one. That short will be called Cubicle. What type of cubicle? The answer may surprise you. You can find that at horrorshowhotdog.com, or I believe that one was on Vimeo. Yes, and with all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Dunn Austin. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other. If you've not checked it out, please go watch the really well-made revival on FX. I'm super biased, of course, but it's a great comic book series, Tim Seeley, and it's an excellent series, and then all the Paper Street folks that are involved with making it and putting it on FX. It's really good, and I've been so proud of how they've adapted this series, this comic that I really, really like. So they've done a great job. So go check that out if you get an opportunity to. We'll be putting more updates up and things like that on the website and other places for our little shindig film dig that'll be coming up here. So we'll keep making updates there. And certainly take care of yourselves, you know, turn off the news and, you know, blow, as John Bratton said, you know, blow up your TV, and move to the country and build you a home. So, you know, in that vein, take care of yourselves and we'll talk to you later. All right. See you later. Bye bye.
I think Push was very mediocre and Orca was kind of fun.
All right, let's do Push in the middle then.
Sure.
Push in the middle.
Y'all, the current tour that Paul McCartney is on is called Paul McCartney Got Back. Because, you know, he had a song called Get Back. But every time I see it, it's like Paul McCartney Got Back. Face with the Oakland booty.
Huh. Got Back. That's a terrible name for a tour.
Like, where did he go? I don't know. But he got back.
But grammatically, it's weird.
Paul McCartney Got Back. Yo, Paul when McCartney it comes to returned. Beatles,
come on.
Tiger Beats got nothing to do with my selection. Only if she's Ringo Starr. Anyway.
Anaconda. Oh, wait.